Hello and welcome to Unquestionably Nerdy, the show where we talk about everything that makes us want to geek out, freak out, and chase him. Because he's the hero Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now. So we'll hunt him, because he can take it. Because he's not a hero, he's a silent guardian, a watchful protector, a dark knight. I am one of your hosts, Kata MacArthur. I am the Dark Knight of those three, and whom am I joined by? Are you the silent guardian or the watchful protector?
You know what? I was just going to say thank you for all of those compliments, because of course, I am Batman.
I'm a special guest.
But I was going to say, I guess we can say the silent protector, Cole Browning.
The silent protector, a mix of the silent guardian, the watchful protector.
Yes. I am both.
Cool. Is that you confirming that you are indeed Batman? Because I have to admit, I've never seen you and Batman in the same room, Cole.
I mean, your detective skills are unmatched, except for me. So good job on figuring it out.
Thank you. Well, Cole, what do you know about Batman? Anything? Anything good?
I don't know that much about Batman. I mean, it's not like, you know, he's my favorite superhero. I didn't spend a good 20 minutes talking about him in our first ever episode.
Right.
Nah, none of that. So
it's not like we've talked about him and a couple of his stories in several episodes of this podcast already.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not like I have basically every animated and live action movie he's ever been in, have all of the animated series that he's been in, except for Brave and the Bold on Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. None of that.
It's not like just before this episode you were organizing your DVD collection, including several seasons of the show and the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, nothing like that. Not at all.
No.
I mean, it's something, you know, it's, I would say the farthest out it could be, which is definitely not me, is recording this podcast with a gigantic signed poster of Lauren Lester, who voiced Robin, as some have told me, in Batman the Animated Series, just hanging above my recording area.
Yeah, that piece of information you have secondhand, not from experience.
Yeah, just secondhand.
Well, neat. Seems like we got a good, like, you know, casual, very basic, very disconnected knowledge of Batman and whatever stories. He is a Batman, right?
Yes, it is 100% yes. Batman, although there is a Batwoman.
Is there?
And there is a Batgirl.
Oh my gosh, every end of the spectrum.
But Batgirl and Batwoman are completely different characters. It's not like Batgirl just got older and she became Batwoman.
No, that'd be too easy.
Batgirl doesn't kill. Batwoman does kill.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you got more knowledge than you're letting on. Okay. Well, it seems like we have a base level knowledge.
Again, that's all secondhand knowledge. I got to point that out again.
All secondhand. We got a good base level secondhand knowledge of Batman and his stories. But Cole, on that same topic, what do you know specifically in your limited knowledge about the morality of Batman? Any controversies he or his stories or his in-universe actions may encourage?
I do know that at least Bruce Wayne does not like to use guns. He does not believe in using guns. I would also say that there are many times, at least through playing through or watching people, you know, this whole secondhand experience, watching them play through these Batman Arkham games, some of these people are just straight up dead at the end of these fights.
Oh yeah.
So I don't think the man has any qualms about that.
No, the small handful of clips that I have also seen and definitely not played of the Arkham games, it's not like he hits people with a car, but it's explained. It's not like it's explained away by some electric field around the car that means it definitely doesn't make contact with the car, and that's definitely why they don't go flying away when said car, said mobile, does not hit them.
I mean, you're right. That's just too far-fetched of an idea. I think what would be more far-fetched is if he basically just shot miniature ballistic missiles at the enemies and just said, I'm fine with bringing down an entire building on top of them. Again, there's two out there for Batman.
Yeah, what would be even crazier is if a depressed billionaire with no parents and issues based off of that dressed up as a bat and beat up criminals on a nightly basis.
Actually,
that'd be crazy. No?
That doesn't sound that crazy to me.
It does sound like a better use of Elon Musk's time than whatever he's doing.
It does. The only thing that would be crazier and I didn't believe is if that whole same thing of dressing up as a bat with no parents and then also happening to make some sort of like heavy metal rap infusion album about his experiences.
Okay, you've lost me. What are we talking about?
Ah, I see we've lost him on the Lego movie.
Okay. Now I'm caught up. Got it. Cool.
I can't believe it. Cad MacArthur, never seen one of the greatest children's movies ever.
No, I've seen it. I just forgot he does a rap.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say the part in the movie that I think is just like the heavy metal, like screamo part. But I want to say like he actually kind of goes into more of like a new metal style rap thing in the credits.
That's right. Yeah, I recall now. I recall. Billy Dee Williams is not in the rap, but he's in the movie.
He's as he should be. In the Lego Batman movie.
He's Two-Face, as he should be.
Yes, he always should have been Two-Face, even in 89.
Yep. But it's clear from all of these wonderful properties that Batman is a massive character. Like, we don't need to state that, but with the impact that Batman has in all of his movies, all of his TV shows, live action and otherwise, all of his video games, all of his comic stories, throughout the entire existence of this character, there have been so many deep dives into the psychology behind the character and whether or not he's an overall positive influence on the settings he exists within. And today, that is specifically what we're going to talk about. The morals behind The Dark Knight. Are these aspects of him that some see as controversial, do they have a place in the story, and do they service the character, or are they admonishments of the character? What do these aspects of the character say about Batman and the stories that he exists within? Are we going to say anything new? Probably not. We only have a cursory knowledge of Batman, after all. We'll definitely stick with that bit. But today we're going to break down a few talking points that are often brought up around Batman in order to not necessarily dismiss Batman as a character, but to maybe add extra layers to the character and question his place and his effectiveness in his own setting within the Gotham, and whether or not he's a good thing for Gotham in setting, which is always a popular question to ask in his stories, and whether indeed the world of the DC universe the DC multiverse is indeed better with Batman in it. Are you ready, Cole?
Of course I am.
Well, fantastic, because the first aspect of Batman that we want to bring up is probably the easiest one to relate to the real world, I guess. It is the one that is most common in these comic book universes, and that being vigilantism. Of course, that exists within the real world to some degree, but in any comic universe, they run whole corporations around saving the world. They form whole superhuman leagues saving the world. But at the end of the day, they are, without a doubt, vigilantes. You have other heroes and anti-heroes and other characters that have an authority structure around them, like Captain America is often part of S.H.I.E.L.D. or other government organizations. He started off as a soldier, of course. You have Captain Atom in the DC universe, who is often a soldier serving the military. But characters like Batman take the law into their own hands and operate under no supervision but their own. They take on their own war on crime and their own protection of Earth into their own hands, and we as the people of Gotham, or the non-superpowered and or non-rich enough to buy a Batmobile civilians, have to just trust within these randomly chosen individuals to protect us. Immediate thoughts, Cole?
I think that when it comes to, I guess, superheroes versus vigilantes, which is kind of the case of, like, you'd say Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, the Holy Trinity of DC. I think what a lot of it comes down to is almost their interactions with normal people, is that, like, each of them basically takes the law into their own hands. But there's a sense of Superman and Wonder Woman at least interact with the government forces, or, like, you know, just the things keeping the world civilized and organized. And they will interact with them, and they make it very clear in those interactions that their goal is to make the world better.
Yeah, Wonder Woman is often seen as a representative of Themyscira, which is essentially an island nation in and of itself, and Superman is often, like, seen as the big blue Boy Scout in stories like The Dark Knight Returns, where he's, like, very much operating on the behalf of the government.
Yeah, so I think that that is a major difference. I think that Batman's is more complicated, because I don't think that Batman basically being a vigilante, taking the law into his own hands kind of idea, isn't what gets him in trouble, I guess, the most, or gives, you know, the somewhat negative opinion to people. I think what causes that negative opinion is almost a sense of, I guess, a standard of treatment or care. Because I think back in, like, say, the 66 Batman series, right? This man could just walk into City Hall and did, you know, crime fighting in broad daylight. Like, he interacted with, you know, the mayor, the police commissioner, the cops, and that was completely different. You probably wouldn't have considered him a vigilante in the sense that what we'd think of now. Back then, he would have been a superhero.
Yeah, back during, like, the Adam West kind of age, he was, like, Batman has always been seen working very closely with figures like Commissioner Gordon, and back in the day of Adam West, that would have been seen in through more of a lens of, like, oh, yep, he's a good guy, so he works with the police. And nowadays, it's more seen as, like, Batman in Gotham specifically operates within a world riddled with corruption, and his partnership with figures like Gordon are him finding the, you know, the spots of light in an otherwise dark and corrupt system, and forcing the system to work by finding the few representatives of the law that he can actually stand behind.
I think that's part of it. I also think that another part of it comes to the fact of, I don't really think that Batman believes in the easy way out.
No, no.
So, like, he still believes in the justice system.
Yeah.
But he doesn't believe in it completely, right? So he's kind of like I just caught a murderer, right? Like, they're going to go to jail for life kind of thing. That doesn't mean that I can't leave them with, you know, a few broken limbs and, like, detriments to just make their life harder to live. Because in Batman's mind, I don't actually know if Batman has any sort of mentality against torture or say, like, just kind of like maiming. Because I think that's part of, at least when you get, like, the Christopher Nolan anthology in, of, like, him being a part of the League of Assassins.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there is almost a level of, like, Batman being a vigilante, where he's like, I don't want to stoop so low as the person that killed my parents. But anything that keeps me above that bar is fair game. And that means anything.
Yeah. And to, like, the point of needing to take the hard way through, and, like, his acceptance of brutalizing criminals. You have the scene, for example, in The Dark Knight when he drops Salvatore Moroni off a fucking building to break his legs in order to get information out of him.
I think that goes to the point of, like, Bruce Wayne's childhood trauma of, he sees basically the detriment of his life being the murder of his parents. And that's one of the reasons that he doesn't like using guns, is he doesn't want to stoop so low as Joe Chill.
Right.
I think an argument that I don't think really many comics have gone into, at least of what I've seen, is truly the argument of where is his like moral bar? Like, yeah. Like we've seen a few like break it before. Like you can look at Alan Moore's The Killing Joke. You could probably look at, I think it's Grant Morrison's Sirius Arkham on Sirius Earth. Goes into the connection that he has with the Joker. But I really think there is a question of, does he actually have like any rules other than I don't want to be like the person that murdered my parents?
Right. And we see certain stories, stories and depictions of Batman, like the Batman Who Laughs during Dark Knight's Metal, as an example of Batman who is completely devoid of his morals, whether that is self-contained morals or morals, moral high ground supported by his allies, like in the Bat family, like part of the Batman Who Laughs descent into madness and villainy is murdering or brainwashing the Robins into his little Robin hellhound goblin creatures.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that we can give on his morality is it is a very, I guess, black and white sense of like good and evil. Like I feel like he is as much a Boy Scout as Superman is when it's treating the good people right.
Right.
Like and again, there may be something I'm missing, but I don't know of any sense where Batman has even like willfully mistreated in any way someone who is innocent in order to make it easier to get the bad guy.
Right. He's not the type of figure to use an innocent person as bait for the Joker or something like that.
So yeah, I really think his morality has to do with his prime difference between, I think, all the superheroes in DC is really the treatment of the bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have like older depictions of Batman that have the older views of criminals as this cowardly bunch that you need to incite fear into. And of course, more nowadays, we see more and more of the ideas in Batman of like criminals like Joe Chill are products of the system that produces them. And we see that in Batman Begins, like there are so many people turned criminals because of economic hardships and because they have no other option. And again, like looking at Batman Begins, the consequences of those hardships are also seen, like the consequences are come out of the causes of those hardships, which are the corruption, which plays into this idea of, is Batman right to take the law into his own hands and operate without warrants and break and enter and shit like that? Is Batman right to do that? But to answer that question, you need to at least partially take into account the question of who else would he trust, especially in Gotham, which is a corrupt system, and in the DC universe where there is corruption and morally gray government agents that are totally immersed within every world government, like Amanda Waller, for example, often operates in a very gray or dirty area to get the job done and protect people, and Batman does not trust her for that. Who else in this setting would Batman trust if not himself and the Bat family that he organizes? Because Batman aims his energy and his support towards members of the Bat family and other superheroes and figures that he deems that he can trust, like the League, that of course brings in the Justice League, that of course brings into the question, like that still brings up the question of who is Batman to decide who is trustworthy. But
I mean, remember though, Batman is only a part-time member of the League.
Right. And lots of depictions, yeah.
And I think that kind of goes to he does really take into account who he can trust, but mm-hmm. his trust is not freely given, but freely kind of taken away. Or he trusts them in very specific circumstances.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to look just kind of how far his trust goes, look at the Babel Protocol.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, he had a way to take out every single superhero that he trusted on the Justice League, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, though, for the most part, those protocols weren't going to kill.
Right. They were twisted by, I think in the comic book, it was Ra's al Ghul that twisted them into lethal options, lethal ways of operating.
I want to say it was Victor Savage.
I know it was Victor Savage in the animated version. I thought I remembered it being Ra's al Ghul in the comic.
Maybe. But yeah, I was going to say, like, Superman's basically turned his X-ray vision inward to himself. Because that was like the muscle kryptonite. It was weird. Kyle Rayner just went blind. I think the only one that actually could have ended up killing somebody was Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, lighting him on fire. Yeah,
yeah, because it was he drank something that made him spontaneously combust, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then again, that is a sense of. For the most part, if we're talking about how he treats those that he sees as good versus bad,
mm-hmm.
I don't think he ever intended to have to kill.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It was just a means of containment if needed.
Yeah, because I'm like, if he wanted to kill, he would have made some sort of like green kryptonite, like magic bullet or bomb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I think when it goes to trust, though. I would say the only people he trusts like wholeheartedly would be the Bat family and probably
more than anybody.
Probably Gordon and Alfred.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's his circle of like direct, like full loyalty and trust. I would say that the Justice League is kind of the next circle outward. Or at least the main core of the Justice League. And then you'd have like everybody they introduce in like Justice League Unlimited. Which is just basically every other DC superhero he'd have interactions with is that next circle out. And then there's everybody else.
Mm. Yeah, I think on this, the point of vigilantism and who can be trusted to hold that power to operate without oversight, I think the Tower of Babel storyline is a good example, is a good story to bring up on this subject. Because it does display the characters who Batman trusts in the Justice League, but also how he would rein them in if needed. But also, within this Tower of Babel storyline, it's also, at the end, the question gets asked of, like, all those contingency plans, and you didn't make one for yourself. And Batman says, I did have a contingency plan. It's you guys. You guys are meant to rein me in if needed. So, he has contingency plans, like, Batman takes the law into his own hands, but he never puts 100% of the trust on anybody, himself included. So even though he doesn't have to operate with warrants or whatever, like a police officer, there are still ways to keep him accountable. And I think that's a brighter point in the debate of whether his vigilantism is warranted and needed and worthwhile. But we also, on the subject of the Tower of Babel, we bring in the brutal ways that his Tower of Babel protocols are inflicted on his Justice League teammates. And that brings me to our next topic, and that is just the violence, just the bones he breaks and the bodily trauma he inflicts and the massive amounts of violence he inflicts on the criminal and the criminally ill, especially focusing on the criminally ill part of this debate. Like, we talked about how so many of the down on their luck goon criminals that Batman fights are just a product of the system, and it's like they should probably be given a second chance or a job at the very least. And then you have all of the inmates of Arkham Asylum who more often than not just need psychological help rather than the beating that he doles out on them. Figures like Scarface that are like very clearly just like in need of intense psychological help. But when you look at these figures, you could very easily make the complaint that Batman is, like, you know, hanging up his dirty laundry by, you know, getting out his frustration and his depression by beating up on criminals. But oftentimes these are violent criminals like the Joker and Bane and Victor Freeze who are going to cause more harm if they are not reined in. So the hope is that Batman only dishes out an appropriate amount of force to take them down. And in a superhuman atmosphere, the appropriate amount of force is going to be more extreme than in the day-to-day type of force needed.
I mean, I guess my question on, you know, his harm against the mentally ill, like if we're really thinking about like the main Batman villains,
mm-hmm.
who would we really consider the mentally ill?
Well, I mean, there is Joker, of course, like the most psychopathic, sociopathic villain, one of the most psychologically ill characters in comics is the Joker. But you also have less directly violent characters like Scarface, who operates on his violent tendencies through the multiple personality kind of situation.
Yeah,
not a psychologist, but of his puppet,
the ventriloquist. And I was gonna say and Scarface. But
yeah,
he tries to help Wesker.
Right, and that's another point that he does beat up on criminals, but there's also in several stories there are examples of Bruce Wayne trying to give these criminals opportunities to reform, like we see in Batman the Animated Series. He's when he does go to Harley Quinn when she gets out of Arkham. He tries to watch over her and help her get to a normal civilian life.
I think that one of the issues that's hard to discern in Batman comics specifically is the sense of restraint that Batman has to give based upon how valid, you know, each person's mental illness is, I guess, is a way to put it. I know that's kind of a, you know, morally objectionable way to say it, but like, think about like Victor Freeze, right? He empathizes with the plot or the plight right. of Freeze. Harley, he, you know, empathizes with her as well because he realizes it was really just kind of manipulation by the Joker.
For sure.
And then you have, again, the ventriloquist and Scarface. You have Harvey.
Yep.
I really think that those people he kind of sees as mental illness truly is a problem. I wish there was something that could be done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then, we all... but then there's more of a sense of like when you look at Bane, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that Bane's mentally ill, even though they put him in Arkham.
Mm-hmm.
Bane is a highly intelligent mercenary. Joker, I mean, even though he was kind of played more to what some theorize is almost like a soldier with post-traumatic stress in The Dark Knight, I still wouldn't say that Joker should kind of be included in this violence against the mentally ill part. Because with Joker, I think the problem with kind of throwing him into it is that the Joker has no moral qualms at all with what he is doing. Like, I feel like on a broader kind of spectrum, and I feel like it's one of the harder things to get in comics, and again, just kind of general world views, is the sense of what villains have ever expressed regret.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like that's something that you get a lot more in, say, Superman or other comics like that. Like, you get villains that, even though DC is a darker universe, there will be some villains that just kind of regret being in the situations or kind of just forced into existing like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their problem.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of the Batman scenarios, and I think it's meant for the audience to kind of be okay with the violence, is because a lot of them chose this path themselves.
Okay.
Like, to me, I personally don't think that Bane is someone that should be in Arkham. Like, I don't see him as insane or like mentally ill. Now, I get that that is a bit different because even though he is a highly intelligent mercenary, the Venom does warp his mind. It's basically a drug addiction.
Sure. Yeah, to be sure.
So there is that to play on. Joker, again, probably a sociopath, highly sadistic, has his issues, but I don't think there's like any regret to anything. I don't know what situation put him there, and I'm not even sure if the whole Three Jokers arc ever really gave a backstory to why any of the Jokers were the way they were. Cobblepot. I think was kind of the same thing, and I think there is a bigger idea with what you're saying of just his amount of violence. I think on the morality of Batman is deciding almost in the moment or with his fights with these villains whether they chose a path based on the circumstances or whether they were basically forced into one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you see with the villains, so you'd say like, you know, Black Mask, Penguin, Joker, Bane, usually some of the more violent confrontations. And then you'd have, you know, the ones who were forced into it, like Harley, you know, the Ventriloquist, Two-Face, where it's not. I think that his violence scale isn't universal, and he almost tries to keep it proportionate to what his morality says is somebody making the choice to be evil and somebody being forced to take the choice to be evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, Batman, the DC universe is often seen as the darker stories, a collection of the darker stories compared to something like Marvel, generally speaking. But when you look at it, in a lot of ways, Batman can be often seen as an optimistic character, that he does hold out hope for a lot of these figures. A lot of the members of his rogues gallery, he does want them to be better, which I think, like, if you look at his no-kill rule, then you could make the argument that that's another supporter of why he might hold the no-kill rule, as because he wants to give these people an opportunity to escape the trauma like he never could from after his parents' death, and like he could so easily be just like them, and so he has to hold out hope that they can be saved in a way. And that's why he does like try to help Harvey Dent, you know, overcome his mental battles with Big Bad Harv or Two-Face or whatever you want to call that other personality of Harvey Dent, or why he does like try to help ingratiate Harley Quinn back into civilian life, or why he does help Victor Freeze's wife and sort of keep Victor Freeze from having that reason to going back to crime. He does pursue those ends of helping criminals reform themselves, get better opportunities for them, and you know, aid towards the psychological needs of the inmates at Arkham in many different ways. One of them very directly is just funding those needs, or like providing jobs and like funding Arkham Asylum, etc., etc. And this brings up a big point, a massive point that people like to bring up when they criticize the character of Batman, and that is his misuse of money. Bruce Wayne is a billionaire. He's one of the richest comic characters ever. What the fuck does Wayne Enterprises even do? Who knows? They do a little bit of everything, I'm sure. But Bruce Wayne is one of the richest fictional characters out there. It is the his joke that as a non-superpowered individual who stands amongst the god-level characters of the Justice League, that his superpower is being rich. So, if he has all this money, why does he spend the money on, you know, batarangs and batmobiles and, you know, enough weaponry to arm a small militia? Why does he spend his money in this way when he could spend his money on charities and reform and funding, you know, proper political candidates and stuff like that? That this is a common criticism of the character of Batman, but anytime I hear it,
it's not a good criticism. I mean,
it's not a good criticism.
You just explained why he doesn't spend his money like that a few minutes ago. The whole circles of trust thing. Do you really think that he trusts anybody else to properly allocate and use his money other than him?
Well, I wasn't even going to say that. I was going to go in the direction of, I always feel like it's a null point in this criticism of Bruce Wayne as a billionaire, that he uses all of his billions on you know, funding his war on crime rather than going to therapy. But there are lots of stories where Bruce Wayne is shown, you know, funding charities and founding charities. And, you know, in The Dark Knight Rises, we know he was funding the orphanage for, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. Like, he was funding that orphanage, and, you know, there's the oh God, his father's name.
Thomas.
The Thomas and Martha Wayne Foundation. Like, he does fund charities all the time, but in addition to that, Batman exists in a world where there are otherworldly threats that need the funding and need the financial backing of batarangs and batmobiles. Because yes, like you were saying, we go back to the point of he has to take on the reins himself and has to go out on his own rules, because he can't trust the GPD on their own. He can only trust Gordon and a few others.
I mean, I definitely think that his lack of trust in a lot of people is still part of it. Mm-hmm. But I think that you do have a really good point that he is, you know, creating all of these charities and doing all of these things. But when we see them in the comics, they almost seem to be centralized around Gotham and like the immediate area mm-hmm. around Gotham. Mm-hmm. And elsewhere, he's basically just a tech billionaire. I struggle in the fact of, in his morality, whether Bruce Wayne and Batman see anything that is not a threat to Gotham as worthwhile. Because, like, that's kind of, like, the big thing. It's like, oh, he comes out for, like, the cosmic events where somebody could destroy Earth, right?
Right, right.
But he's not like Superman that would, like, go out to try and stop a world war like we saw in, like, the newest Superman movie. That's not a Batman thing. Batman would be like, okay, so there's two people fighting on a continent where Gotham is not? Why?
Not my problem.
I do think, though, that one of the things that you do see about that, where he still kind of helps, and his help is almost by abstinence, is you see in The World's Finest, when he teams up with Lex Luthor for, like, these mining robots, right? Where the military says, hey, this has great military application as weapons. And then Bruce goes to visit it and said, oh, yeah, the military's looking at this, so we're looking at adding weapons. And then he's like, I don't want weapons. I don't want to be associated with any sort of like violent technology. I'm out of here. And he pulls out. So I don't really think that Bruce's direct intervention kind of mindset in the outcomes of things outside Gotham really exists. I think he's more towards putting his money where his mouth is, because he wants to use his money for what is close in his heart, which is the city of Gotham.
Okay, but then the argument becomes, I would say, in the in that case, the argument becomes, is that selfish? If he only prioritize, if he chooses to only monetarily prioritize the things that are close to home, is that selfish? When there are so many other places he could benefit by spending his health in, like, you know, Gotham is in canon set in Jersey. So why doesn't he go to economically in need places in the rural south of the United States? Or why doesn't he go to, you know, places in the Middle East that need financial aid? Or why doesn't he found, you know, any sort of foundations to help on a larger global sense?
Because there's not a because there's not a Batman.
There's not a Batman in those places. Well, he founds what is it?
Batman Incorporated.
Batman Incorporated.
So that's what I was gonna bring up. Is I think that Bruce Wayne would actually be more prone to spending his money usefully across the entire world instead of just not centralizing it in Gotham, mm-hmm. as long as he knows that there's somebody there, basically a watchdog.
Okay.
And I kind of feel like that's the reason that the Bat family exists, is when the Bat family gets old enough, they branch off to different cities. They're there as the protectors. And then, you know, they could also work and do all this charitable stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we move on from this subject of the misuse of the money and whether or not that discredits Batman, just to say it, also, eat the rich. But on that point, Cole, you do offer a wonderful transition into our next topic, and that being the Bat family themselves. A common criticism, of course, another common criticism of the character of Batman is the Bat family itself and how he builds it. He's operating with Gordon, who's meant to be a police commissioner upholding the law, but Batman himself operates outside the law, so where is the accountability there? The Robins and the Batgirls are, you know, making up a large portion of the Bat family, but they are young adults, often orphaned, brought into a war on crime from a young age. And rather than, you know, bring them into his protection as his wards and then getting them fucking therapy, he puts 12-year-olds in bulletproof armor and gives them a bo staff and tells them to go fight crime.
Now, which one was the bo staff? Was that Jason or Tim?
Tim Drake.
Did Jason Todd even have a weapon?
Tim Drake had the bo staff. Dick Grayson, when he became Nightwing, had the skirmish sticks. And Jason Todd has a gun. He's got guns.
That's true. As Red Hood, he does.
As Red Hood, he has the hood so he can headbutt people.
See, I don't know if... I've always looked fond on the Bat family.
Sure. You know, at the end of the day, at the end of all these debates, we can say, like, each of these characters have saved the world themselves a dozen times over, like, just on their own backs. So the stories they exist in kind of, you know, excuse any morally gray areas or morally gray questions of inducting 12-year-olds into a war on crime, because each of those 12-year-olds have grown up to save the world at some point. So the stories themselves kind of excuse the actions. But looking past that,
I do think that part of the reason that he kind of takes the Bat family and why I'm in support of it,
mm-hmm.
is because I feel like Bruce Wayne's entire reason for taking these children in is, at least I had Alfred, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that in his mind, there's this sense of, I was lucky to not end up crossing the line,
right.
and basically becoming the person that killed my parents in some act of revenge.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that it's part of Batman's philosophy, and again, I could be wrong, that you can walk up to that line and just not cross it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in his mind, that is how he has been able to overcome things. And I almost think that he wanted to pass it on to the Bat family.
Right.
so that they wouldn't cross the line either. Because I think that everybody in the Bat family came from a worse condition overall, right? I was going to say, we don't know what could have happened to them. I mean, we know that Dick Grayson, of course, would have become a Talon. But other than that, we don't know.
Yeah, Dick Grayson would have been recruited into becoming a Talon. Jason Todd was found on the streets, you know, stealing the wheels of the Batmobile.
And then Tim Drake, his father died, but his father was a criminal. Who, as far as I know, worked for Two-Face, at least in the extent of the animated series, and may have been killed by Two-Face inadvertently, but either way, I think that, and people can have the debate on whether it was misguided or not, but I think that Batman saw the best way for me to make sure that these children don't go down the cycle of revenge that will make everything worse is to show them how to walk up to the line and not cross it.
Yeah, the intent that is often spouted from Batman is, like we see in the first season of Young Justice, like, why would you recruit Robin at such a young age so that he could turn out like you? And Batman goes, so that he wouldn't. That's often the reasoning that Batman gives for why he inducts the Robins and the Batgirls, for example, as an example. But the question becomes, is that really a better answer than, you know, adopting them when they become orphans and just getting them fucking therapy that they would have fucking needed? Because I think if you go to any psychological professional, I'm not a fucking psychologist. I'm not a therapist. Bruce Wayne can pay for therapy, no problem. I think if you go to any psychological professional, none of them will tell you, oh yeah, they just need to beat the aggression out of them by breaking the jaws of a few low-level gang members and then punching Two-Face on both sides of his faces. I don't think any psychological professional would tell you the way that Batman, you know, teaches them that lesson of where not to cross the line. I don't think anybody with any psychology degree would say, yep, that's the golden way to do it. And, like, you have stories where,
he trusts psychologists?
No, by no means Batman trusts psychologists. And, like, you have stories of, like, when the alternate universe take on Jason Todd, where Jason Todd famously dies in A Death in the Family, but we have the alternate universe take where Batman is the one to die instead, and he is approached by all the members of the Bat family trying to encourage him that there was no other way it could have gone, and like there's a healthier way around this, and you don't need to give in to your anger, and et cetera, and like therapy doesn't do any help for him, and like the positive reinforcement of his loved ones don't do anything for him. And I feel like that's not a positive view on therapy. I think, like, obviously, it's a superhero story. We're not gonna fix everything with therapy. We're gonna fix everything with punching bad guys in the face. But it's a poor indictment on the author's view of therapy if we say, oh yeah, no amount of therapeutic help was going to alleviate the psychological toll of losing your parents and your adoptive father / mentor. So,
well, I think it's more of the, I mean, again, almost the sense of, I don't think that any therapy would have helped any of the Bat family. I think it's
in story, sure.
In story, sure. But again, like the amount of basically trauma added upon the reaction being almost intense rage because each of their parents was basically taken out in the way that they were. Again, not knowing Jason Todd's story, but I want to say his mother died in the explosion with him.
Yes. Yes. In A Death in the Family, yeah.
Yeah. But that was after he was dead, so. But I think it's more the question of why did he pay for their therapy, and more of why did Bruce Wayne decide that they couldn't just also get this done by punching a punching bag?
Right.
Because that was kind of the thing, is that I think it took what I would say is a semi-realistic approach in terms of there needs to be some outlet for anger and aggression.
Fair, fair.
So I think really if you're going into this like therapy thing, sure, maybe it could have helped a bit, but I think it's more the argument of why did he go straight to bad guys instead of punching bags and like say wooden boards or something with people's faces on them.
Yeah, go to a rage room if anything.
Yeah. And so I think that's kind of more the difference. Is I think everyone in the Bat family basically just needed a rage outlet.
Yeah.
And the thing to debate is why Bruce Wayne / Batman said, "I got that outlet for you, bad people," instead of literally every other viable rage outlet.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it is, to some degree, another example of the story is the thing that excuses it, because in real life, therapy only works as much as the patient is willing to cooperate. If it is a scenario of, you know, a young, angry Jason Todd going into therapy and refusing to work with a therapist, and that's when he chooses to go and become Robin or Red Hood or whoever and, you know, beat up on criminals, then that is the story deciding then that that's where the story needed to go.
True. But also,
in the real world,
I've heard the argument, though, because think about martial arts, why people take martial arts for self-defense, right? But some people go into martial arts having anger issues.
Yeah.
It's one of those ideas of by training, bettering yourself, and having the ability to harm and in some cases kill somebody makes it so that you don't want to.
Right. Having the ability but not committing the act, yeah.
And I do think that that's kind of the thing that Batman saw for these children, is I want them to gain the ability to be able to take their violent revenge. Mm-hmm. But in going through all of this, they will realize they don't want to cross that line.
Okay.
I think you have to take that martial arts mentality, is that the stronger and the better you become at kicking people's asses, the more you look at fighting not as a way to hurt somebody.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think the phrasing of hurt somebody is quite important to Batman in particular and the Bat family as a whole. Hurting and not killing, which brings us to our final point for the evening, and that being the legitimacy of the famous no-kill rule. And no matter how you look at this no-kill rule, Batman always espouses it as this mindset that he has to hold in his soul, that if he were to cross that line, like you were talking about, he would slip into that dark place and would become worse than any villain in his rogues gallery. And like we said earlier, like we've seen what that looks like in the form of the Batman Who Laughs, this Batman without a moral compass. We've seen that in versions of Batman like the Flashpoint Thomas Wayne Batman, who has less of a care about killing, less of a care about the sanctity of human life and less preservation of it.
The Thomas Wayne Batman just uses guns. I'm pretty sure he just has multiple.
Yeah. Throws people off rooftops. Yeah. That is the point that is always raised by Batman, is that if he were to cross that line, he doesn't know if he'd be able to bring himself back. And it's seen as a bullshit mentality on Batman's part so often, because at a certain point it becomes undeniable that Batman may not pull the trigger himself, but by not killing his rogues gallery, Batman, without a doubt, allows the deaths of so many more people than he saves. every time the Joker breaks out of Arkham Asylum and goes on a fucking killing spree, like we see it at the start of the New 52, the first time Joker comes back and he tears through that precinct in the Gotham PD, leaving only Gordon alive. All of those deaths are in some way, shape, or form on Batman's hands.
I mean, true.
And to clarify to our audience, we are speaking on this plain and simple, 100% in a comic book standpoint. We are not talking about the legitimacy or lack thereof of the death penalty in the real world. That is not our place. We're talking about comic books and murderous clowns and grown men in bat suits. But you're okay. Because I feel like this could easily fall into that conversation, which is not something we're going to have on this show.
I would say that it didn't even cross my mind. I was honestly just kind of thinking of when Gordon's wife died, because that was that was a crazy 90s comic. Man.
Oh, yeah. That was one like where Joker drops the baby and she goes to catch it dropping her gun.
Yes.
Yep. And then he walks out not smiling. He loses his smile at that point.
I guess the question is, would more people be dead if Batman didn't exist? Because one thing that I will defend, which I think is just an absolute lie, is that by Batman existing, basically the crazies of Arkham Asylum just started coming up in droves. I think that the crazies in Arkham Asylum always would have existed, Batman or sans Batman.
Right. There is like the point of, you know, that duality between Batman and Joker is that they motivate each other, but like we don't know the origin of Joker. It's always been kept purposely vague, other than like storylines like the three Jokers or the Killing Joke that hints at a possible backstory for the Joker. It's always been kept purposely vague. So the Joker probably would have always existed with or without Batman, unless you're looking at the original Tim Burton Batman, where Jack Nicholson just started out as a gun for hire and became the Joker. But you're right. Yeah. It's not like Tony Stark in the MCU, where he's creating all of his villains throughout his Iron Man trilogy. Like how many villains does Batman honestly create for himself? He has the Joker, who is motivated by Batman, but like Bane chose to focus his aggression on Batman out of a childhood trauma. Fucking Two-Face was scarred during a trial, not in relation to Batman. Harley Quinn was turned by the Joker, separate to Batman.
I would say that Joker, if you go by kind of the established mythos of the Killing Joke, where he was the Red Hood, and like, you know, you had the the chemical factory, the Ace chemical plant, then I think you could only say that Batman created the Joker, and that is singularly the only one. I can't think of others that could in any way support that argument other than the Joker. However, I do still think that the no-kill rule is warranted.
Okay.
Because I think we've seen the amount of power that Batman could have. I mean, again, we're going back to like the Babel Protocol. We're talking about the building of the Watchtower. And just being, what is he? He's top five smartest people in the DC universe.
Yeah.
And with his resources, with his just physical prowess, like, he's probably one of the strongest like people on Earth that is like a normal human.
Yeah.
Because he's like massive in the comics.
He is peak athleticism for a regular human.
Yeah. So I honestly think that his fear is valid. I mean, with all the plans he had to kill the rest of the Justice League, he could eliminate millions if he really wanted to. And I think that we see this with Ozymandias from Alan Moore's The Watchmen.
Yeah.
I think that if Batman had killed someone, then he would have turned into Ozymandias, saying the best way to help the world is to kill a massive portion of them.
Mm.
And like, again, people still debate whether it was in good faith that Ozymandias had his argument in The Watchmen. Because in the end, spoiler for those of you who've never read it, his plan does result in world peace.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't extend too far into the future. I think it's about 6 months to a year.
Until Rorschach's journals get out.
Yeah, but the plan did result in world peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a question that will never be answered. At least, not as long as Batman comics and movies and TV shows and video games continue to sell. Because that, we were talking about this earlier, the reality of characters, episodic characters like these, canonized, serialized characters like these, is that as long as there are stories to tell with these characters, they will always, there will always be answers to these questions, and then follow-up stories that dissolve those questions and those happy endings wrapped up in a bow, and the stories will just continue, and the questions will be continue to be asked.
I think one of the greatest errors in terms of Batman canon is the fact that we had Oracle and Barbara Gordon that was shot by the Joker in The Killing Joke.
Right.
And then Killing Joke was made canon.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that DC made the worst decision in all of Batman history by changing the ending of The Killing Joke. I think that in the end, The Killing Joke is one of the saddest endings to any Batman comic. Because the Joker won in the end.
Right. And spoilers for Killing Joke.
And what we're saying in this, you know, no killing kind of rule in Batman's fear. Yeah, spoiler for Killing Joke. Joker winning, I personally think, in my opinion, that the correct ending of The Killing Joke is that Batman chokes the Joker out and kills him.
Right, right.
Because Batman is shown laughing at the end as like some big karmic joke. I think the Joker broke the Batman and he killed. Right. And I think you can kind of see into it however you want, but the crazy eyes on Batman, his fear was justified.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think that that ending justifies it. The no-kill rule, even though he does a lot of damage that doesn't kill people, is valid because, I mean, just look at that ending. I think Alan Moore believed that just a single kill, especially of Batman's greatest enemy, would spell doom.
Yeah. And then we can look at other examples of Batman definitely killing, like when he locks KG Beast in a sewer chamber, puts up a block of wood up against the door to starve him to death, and then there's Infinite Crisis when he shoots Darkseid. Is that Infinite Crisis? Which Crisis is that?
It is Infinite... It's Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
What? So there's Identity Crisis, there's Crisis on Infinite Earths, and there is Infinite Crisis, I believe.
Batman kill Darkseid.
Batman never kills Darkseid. Darkseid kills Batman.
Final Crisis. But yeah. Batman has broken the rule, especially if you ask Zack Snyder. But like with all of these rules, there are, of course, exceptions to them. There are aspects of, with any of these aspects of Batman, you can find counterpoints to them or moments in stories where Batman goes against them. In his first appearance back in the original Detective Comics, one, Batman uses a gun, and two, he hangs the bad guys from ropes tied to the Batplane. There are exceptions to all these rules, and there, of course, is no right answer, because comics are up to interpretation, and how these characters exist over, like, nearly a century is up to interpretation of a collection of stories written by different authors and penned by different illustrators.
Yep, and I want to say, if you're looking for the origin of the no-kill rule, just to bring up Cadden's point of the original comics... I don't believe the rule was ever a part of Golden Age Batman.
Right.
I'm not sure when it came about, but I want to say it was sometime in the 50s or 60s When we said you got the more lighthearted Adam West style, I want to say it was it was part of the introduction of the Silver Age when everything became campier, and they wanted to make that a clear rule across all superheroes, not just Batman. It just stuck with Batman most because Batman was, you know, kind of clearly the most vigilante and like violent of the Golden Age.
Yep. Well, if anybody knows the has any bit of fun trivia as to when the no-kill rule was first mentioned or its earliest appearance, let us know. That'd be neat.
So if anybody knows Alan Moore's number.
Yeah, he doesn't want to talk to us. He doesn't want to talk to anybody.
Ah, dang it, that's right. But what what if, Caden? What if we could just get the interview?
It'd be scary. I don't know if I would want that interview.
I would love it.
Scary guy. We'll do it. Somebody get him on the phone. We'll sacrifice however many innocents he prefers.
Hold on. Batman would never sacrifice innocents.
And I'm not talking about Batman. Yes, if you can get Batman on the phone and get him on the podcast, that'd be great, audience.
No. All I'm saying is this. We will not... How dare you, Caden? We would not sacrifice innocents for the interview or for the views. Come on, man. We just spent an entire hour talking about Batman. We have to be better than Batman.
We can't. I'm going to stop you right there. We can't. And we won't.
But we have to try.
Yeah, all right. I guess so.
We can try to be Superman.
If you got that Kryptonian biology coming in that I didn't know about, let me know.
If only.
If only. But, dear audience, did any of this make sense? Did we make any good points? Do you have any good points? Let us know in the comments below. We would love to hear them.
And guys, if you did like this episode, let us know if you want to see more. We have a few more ideas for the morality of different superheroes across Marvel, DC, and some independent comics. So let us know in the comments who you'd like to see.
Yeah, we'd love to hear it.
All right, guys. Well, for now, I believe it's time to send you off. So I am Cole Browning.
I'm Gavin MacArthur.
And this has been Unquestionably Nerdy. Good night.
Good night. Dark night. I am night.